And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Graham Hart Show here on Cornwall Revolution Radio. It's a little bit of a mix-up tonight because I've lost my guest, folks, with just an hour to go. In fact, I've not even pulled up my show notes yet. It's absolute chaos. We supposed tonight have John Kaminski with us, and unfortunately, John can't make it. It's partly my fault. Well, it's all my fault, actually, folks. I messaged John last night to let him know the time, and to confirm him to being on the show, and I put down 4 to 6, which of course we are 6 to 8. I keep getting mixed up because I used to go out at 9 to 11 this end, which is now 11 to 1 our end. So at the moment we don't have a guest, but I do have Bryce with me. I do have a guest, I think. Are you there, Bryce?
I'm here, Graham.
Ah, dear, what chaos. It's my fault, folks. It's chaos here. My wife's not been well. I've been in the studio. What I did last night, you see, I confirmed with John. So much going on over the weekend. I confirmed with John and put down the wrong time. John got back to me and said, "Where are you?" Because you see me come online. And said, "Oh, why, there you are." And I went, "Oh, John, I'm so sorry. I suppose it's supposed to be 6 to 8. It's now 9:30 or another hour and a half to go. I'm so sorry." So John wrote back right away. He said, "I have some medical issues and some other commitments at play here. Let's try for another day." So unfortunately, John Kaminski is not going to be with us tonight, ladies and gentlemen. But if I'm correct, I think at the very last minute, talk about the last minute, I think we're going to hopefully bring in Clint Richardson. So shall we do that now, Brian?
Why not?
Yes.
If he wants to come on and see what he thinks.
Well, the message says, "What an honor, I am here indeed." So
bring him in.
If Clint can join us, that would be fabulous. It's calling. Clint.
Yes.
Clint Richardson. In person.
One of many legal names by that title, yes.
Clint, so thank you so much for joining us. I don't know if you've caught it. We're supposed to have John Kaminski, and John's gone sick. I got the time wrong. You're on the list. We're working our way down towards you because I wanted to speak to you ahead of the show with Bryzer, because the three of us are pretty much into law, and it would have been good to try and work something out. But we can talk generally tonight. Thank you so much for coming on, my friend.
Sure. Anytime.
And we have Bryzer here as well.
Hi, Clint. How are you, man?
Hey, my friend. How are you?
Yeah, a long time no speak. Good to have you on here, man. It's great.
I just love to hear you guys' accents.
Is that all you come on for?
And you get to hear my shitty American one.
No, that's good. It's all good. Well, what I was going to talk about, if we were on our own, and it don't make any difference really, is the one thing I wanted to bring that is right at the fore at the moment is Donald Trump's decision to name Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, Clint.
By what authority?
Exactly. That's a good.
I'm getting a feedback. By the way, I'm hearing myself after I speak.
Okay, is it bad? Yeah. It'll probably settle in a moment.
I always get feedback as well, but it seems to be okay my end now too. But go on anyway.
We'll keep trying.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you say we're before the show?
No, we're live now.
We're live.
Oh, okay.
We're live now.
We're live now.
Yeah. This is just really last minute stuff. Anyway, live radio. Jesus, great.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, as far as I'm concerned, that's Trump done. He's finished for me now. He's bombed Syria, and now he's pulled this trick. This is beyond belief. I mean, there's people dying as we speak because of this decision. I've just watched a little clip on Facebook of two Palestinians were shot dead, and there's riots going on out there. But why did he do it, Clint?
Well, the one speech that Trump has made where he was extremely affluent and a really, really good speaker was a speech in which he absolutely 100% showed that he's a Zionist, that he praises Israel, and every single word and every single sentence was beautifully eloquated, and you know, the whole Stockholm syndrome came rushing out. You know, he knows he's there because of the Israeli lobby. He knows why he's there. He knows which hands feed him. And he's, you know, this is the only speech where he wasn't hemming and hawing, and he just had everything perfectly right when he did his speech about Israel. So all I can say on the subject is, again, by what authority can someone make that kind of declaration, especially after the United Nations declared it was an illegal state, an illegal occupation? But think of it this way, my friend. You see, since World War II, America hasn't declared a war. So all we've done is occupy countries. We've been to 55 countries in occupation. So why would we think that anything is wrong with a bunch of people who call themselves Jews who are not going to Israel, or I should say Palestine, and taking over and calling it Israel? Why would anyone think that that is unnatural or not normal or even moral, you know, in this group that we're talking about?
Well, they're certainly Jews, aren't they? And did we?
Well, you know, I read a book that finalized what a Jew is for me. And of course, the ancient Jews have nothing to do with no. Modern Jews.
Yeah.
And it's a book by John Glad. It's called Jewish Eugenics. And it was strictly sourced by Jewish authors, Jewish scientists, Jewish this, Jewish eugenicists, Jews. And of course, genetics is another word for eugenics. And he put it, he went through the whole thing. You know, it started as a religion, then it became a maternal orbit thing at all. And then one of the prime ministers even said that anyone who says they are is a Jew. Right. So he's quoting all these wonderful, wonderful sources. And by the end of the book, he basically, or the end of this list of things that has been called a Jew before in modern Judaism or modern Zionism, he finally ends with saying it's very simple. It is, and it's exactly what it is. If you think about it, it's a genetic, it's called a cultural and breeding alliance. It's not a religion. It is not a race. It is nothing of anything that you could put your finger on. But what you can call it is a cultural and breeding alliance.
Okay. That throws a different slant on things, surely.
It does for me, yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, they're Jews. Let's get over it. That's the name they go by, these people.
Well, To be clear, the word Jew is not in the Bible. However, in the old Latin and et cetera, you know, I mean older versions, you had the words Iudios and you had the word Yahudi. And both of those basically mean to be opposed to Christ, which means to be opposed to the New Testament, the new law, the law that's supposed to fulfill the old law because there's so many holes in it. The law, the Babylonian law, the law of Moses is basically what, in other words, it was an Israelite that had fallen away from God's law, the natural law, the law of nature, I should say. So that really is, according to the concordances anyway, that I've read, was the biblical notion of a Jew. It was never a good thing. It was never something that you'd, you know, it was always the synagogue of Satan, in other words.
Right. Okay. But all I'm saying is that, you know, the Jew is our enemy. And that's the generalization term, which I think that's where we got to stay. You know, it's the Jews. I mean, let's get it down to three words. All the problems on the planet, everything I've ever researched, it all comes back to Jewish power every time. They're always Jews. All right, I call them Khazars if you want, but they're now Jews. They're calling themselves Jews, and I'm happy to call them Jews if you're allowed to.
One of John Glad's points was that, gee, black Ethiopians are Jews, white-haired, blonde-haired Germans are Jews, red hair, black hair, any kind of skin color, anybody can be a Jew. So who then is the Jew? And to call it a cultural inbreeding alliance, of course, when the Ethiopians, black Ethiopians came over because, hey, the prime minister said anybody that calls themselves a Jew can be a Jew. All of a sudden, you got this influx of black people coming over, and they're like, ah, crap, let's pass a law that says we'll force sterilize all the Ethiopian women with Deprovera before they can become citizens, right? So in other words, it's really not something you can I'll put it to you this way, and this might offend people, I don't know. I consider the Queen of England a Jew.
Me too.
I consider the President of the United States a Jew. I consider anybody in Congress a Jew. I consider anybody who is in the position where they're in a cultural and breeding alliance, and that describes the entire genealogical structure of everybody that owns us or says they do, the whole royal line, the line of presidents, the line of governors, the line of CEOs, the line of everything out there that has any clout, they're the Jew. Which makes it a term that just means adversary, and of course the word adversary means Satan.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, fair comment. I'm just saying that's a good explanation, Clint. But at the end of the day, it's the Jews who are causing us all the troubles, everything, and I've done for thousands of years, so we're now sort of getting our heads around that. I mean, like what he's done there now, what Trump has done is just finished him. Yes, he's surrounded by all his chief aides are Jews. They run the whole show. But for him to, someone was saying about this politically, I forget it, I think it was a Jewish guy. I heard it was on The Fetch on Saturday. People might have listened. What did he say? He said, we've thrown away the crown, one of the top jewels that we had as a bargaining chip. And we could have used this to say, okay, well, you can have Jerusalem as your city, as the Israeli city, but we will not grab any more land in the West Bank. And yet he gave it to them for free. There was nothing in it for anyone else at all. I thought that was a very valid point.
Well, and It's also important to note that when Israel, quote unquote, was established as a corporate structure in the desert, that was the English that did that. All right, that wasn't the Jews. The Jews pledged their allegiance, and I'm sure you guys all know this.
Yeah.
The Jews pledged their allegiance openly and officially, worldwide Jewry, worldwide Congress, to England, the King of England. Or queen, whatever, and said, do it for us. So, and this goes back to the kingdom of Jerusalem from the early, 1000s up until about 12, I think 15 or 16, when Queen Elizabeth lost that part of the world of which was part of the crown. So, I mean, this is an old, old feud. It is an old piece of territory that England, the Crown Corporation, wanted back. It really has nothing to do with Jews. I believe the Jew thing is just an excuse. I believe the notion of Jewishness is as Shlomo Sand, an Israeli author, said in his book, The Invention of the Jewish People, another must-read, that it's simply a way to pretend that you have a right to do things, an old ancient right, even though you have nothing to do with those original people. And for all intents and purposes, it even looks like the Palestine or the Palestinian people were actually the original quote-unquote Jews that were in that area. They hide their Jewish artifacts for fear of the Muslim authorities and the retribution. So there's all kinds of little factoids out there that completely defeat this notion. But to me, it's a way of saying, we have the right to kill, to pillage, to thieve. We have the right because we get revenge. And you see, that's the old law. The new law doesn't. That's why they're anti-Christian or anti-Christ. It's an excuse.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose these are things we haven't looked at too much. And there is that link, obviously, with the Crown. I've been aware of that. So we're going back to the Bible. Weren't Jews back then called the Edomites or the Pharisees? And that wasn't that another term for them?
I believe the Pharisees were the authors of law, right. legal writers, legal scholars, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I suppose. And then when you look at it today, then are what the Jews that we see today in Israel, are they just acting on behalf of the Crown, or are they doing their own thing?
Did you ever happen to see the movie Defamation?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that movie describes perfectly what's happening to the common people in Israel. They do not follow the Torah in any way, shape, or form. Even our dictionaries say that the Talmud is their civil law, just like we have a legal civil law, and it's supposed to be balanced and checked by the spiritual law of the Bible as common law. Their civil law is the Talmud, which is supposed to be checked and balanced by the Torah. Well, Torah, unfortunately, you know, the new law is supposed to fulfill the old law and you know, make it Christ-like, but again, they're literally the opposed to Christ, opposed to the new law.
They're certainly opposed to Christ and certainly the white people as well. From the genocide, as I've gone through this journey, Clint, it's become clear to me now that that who's under real attack here are the white race.
Oh, you mean all 9% of us?
Oh, I heard it was 8, so we're gone up 1%. That's great.
Oh, well, shoot.
Well, we gave the world everything. That's where I'm at. It seems to be, good grief, it's the Jews. Oh, my God, everything I've been looking at for the last 5 years, it's the Jews. They're everywhere I look. And now, when I look at it now, and look at what's happening in the country and what's happening in Europe with the mass immigration. The Kalergi plan is kicking in big time. So it's about the savior of the white race who gave the world everything. Everything that we're using, everything that we're using to do this broadcast now, and God knows all the arts and everything else. We are the creators. We're the people. The white people created everything on this planet. You know, don't tell me reggae, folks. You wouldn't have reggae if you didn't have three chords, and they all come from the classics. So we gave the world everything, and they hate us for it. And that's where I am now. It's the protection of the white race.
Well, and you know what culture does not say the same thing, right? So yeah. For some reason we're looked down upon. My heritage is, of course, German. And the word German comes from Germain, which literally means pure blood. Now, does that mean that I think I'm superior or whatever? No, I wouldn't go that far. But it does mean that I can recognize that I am a unique individual from a unique race, just like every other race out there. And that I have the equal right, just as every other race, to protect, refine, learn, understand, and certainly guard against what's happening to my race, which is, as you say, a slow, a meaningful, obvious genocide. And so, yes, I agree to the extent that, you know, when it comes to the violent aspect of some of these groups out there, then it goes a little too far. But at some point, you know, what blood will be shed, obviously. So.
Do you see civil war on the way, Clint?
You know, there's a quote from someone, and I can't remember exactly who the quote was by. I could probably pull it up real quick, but it's a simple quote. And he says, a civil war is a war of words. That's it. Civil war is a war of words. So civil war is something that isn't a war. It's an executive decision to preserve something. In our case, in America, civil war was to preserve the Union. It had nothing to do with slavery in the least. In fact, there was a 13th Amendment before our current 13th Amendment. And in 1861, they passed an amendment. It passed the House, the Senate, and was signed by President, I want to say, Jackson? No, whoever took over Lincoln's spot. And Lincoln campaigned on it, that said slavery would be perpetual, that the federal government could not take away the right of states to hold slaves. That was going to be our law in the United States, but it just happened to be passed at the time where the South was already rebelling because the North was encroaching, the federal government was encroaching on all their lands. It wasn't about slavery. It was about, as Lincoln said, preserving the quote-unquote Union, i.e. the continuity of government. So a civil war, you know, you got to delve into that. And that's what I've been discussing on my show, actually, is a true history lesson. And you've got to realize that, you know, you're talking about a war of words, which means a war, in other words, the renaming or the restatusing of people.
Yeah.
Right. So this was a country, and I'm not saying this is good or bad. I'm just giving history. Okay, this was specifically a country that was for, quote, ourselves and our posterity. In other words, they define it, white persons and their posterity. That is what this country was intended for. There's no getting around that. It was a slave-holding corporation that they set up. You just can't get around it, right? There was no equal rights. There was no multiculturalism. There was none of that. That is our history. Good or bad, I'm not going to comment. I'm just saying that what a civil war is designed to do, and what ours was designed to do by the federal government, was to take all those private slaves and make them federal. In other words, enfranchise them all into the United States, make slavery voluntary, and basically lower the status of all the white people down to the level of that slave status, that civil or public status. That is the purpose, or was the purpose, of our particular civil war. And so I would say that the purpose of the next one would be to do the same exact thing, to again lower the status of the alien friend to the alien enemy. In other words, all the Muslims, all the Mexicans, all of the different cultures that are coming into our country without permission will suddenly be equal in status, and suddenly it will overwhelm the system, etc., etc., etc.
So would you not see the white races, the white people, not taking a stand?
I mean, I would like to think that we would, as a unified group, when we do discover that we are being, you know, torn asunder, that our genetic code is being rewritten, that France, for instance, when the prime minister came out and said that if you don't start intermarrying, we're going to make it a law that you intermarry with different races, that sort of thing.
He said
I would think.
He said that? He said that, Clint?
He did. Actually, David Duke reported on that. That was his speech. I wrote about that. I did a Zionism 101 article on my blog that has that in it. But I would think that, you know, if I go to an African city, I would expect to see black Africans. If I go to a Japanese city, I would expect to see Japanese, absolutely, Chinese, Korean, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But for some reason, when a white person, quote unquote, talks about this, we are somehow the evil ones. And I don't understand that. I don't know where that came from. I do understand it's a complete psyop. It is to turn us into the enemy when, as you say, we've contributed so much to society itself. And of course, you got to think of governments for what they are. They're corporations started by families. If you start a corporation, who are you going to leave that corporation to? Who are you going to leave the power to? You're going to leave it to your family. You're going to leave it to your bloodline. And that's what the law recognizes as inheritable rights. So the whole idea is to get rid of those God-given rights, get rid of the blood, taint the blood in attainder legally, fictionally, and then destroy the notion of inheritable rights so that everybody can compete and the whole concept of inheritable land goes away, except for those few elite, which we would call, I would call Jews.
Yeah, I think
it's interesting what you say about Civil War, Clint, because similar thing happened in Ireland. We had our War of Independence in 1921, and then we became actually a sovereign republic, believe it or not, for about a year. And then the British Crown forced a civil war upon us, mm-hmm. based on religious division, Catholic and Protestant. So the island was divided north and south, but both entities were still controlled by the Crown.
And would you say it was a war of words, Protestant? Yes. Right.
Yeah,
that's all it
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
You're trying to be a word that's not authorized by church and state. How dare you?
Yeah. So, like, they weren't going to have a sovereign republic, which was a true sovereign republic. I mean, we had a sovereign constitution, which was probably one of the best constitutions ever written. There's a real history behind all of that, how that all came about.
Sure.
Here, but I mean, that was not going to be allowed to happen, never. And so the Civil War started. You had families literally fighting each other again, a war of words kind of thing. Who was your loyalties? You know, who are you loyal going to be? You know, and so you had Northern Ireland, which remained part of the United Kingdom, and then you had the Irish Free State. It was only in 1937 that the Irish Free State decided that we wanted out of the Commonwealth of the Empire, and we declared ourselves a republic, but we were still under the Crown because we maintained all the British laws, the bar and all of that, and the banking system as well, all controlled from the City of London. So it was a massive psyop when you think about it.
Exactly. And what is a psyop? But again, a war of words, right? A war of images and words.
But there is going to be bloodshed, Clint, as there was in Ireland.
The question to me is, will there be a genocidal bloodshed or the bloodshed of men who finally grow a pair of balls and actually fight for their inheritance? That's really the only question I ask. Will there be bloodshed? Certainly. Will there be another Bolshevik type revolution where the bourgeoisie, the middle class, get destroyed, especially the white farmers, specifically in Russia? Yeah, I believe that will be the case unless we actually take a stand, and soon here, especially in America, where we're suddenly becoming the minority. Now, that is that. Keep in mind, that doesn't mean that those who are the elite, the private landholders that still remain in the states, those who are Congress, those which I call Jews, that are actually in charge of the country. What I'm talking about is the common stock. When you stock a farm or when you stock a country, it's called peopling the country. Right now, our country is being peopled, and your country and everybody's country is being peopled by refugees, peopled by illegals who are given certain benefits to come here. At our expense. That is what is happening. We are being peopled by a different people. And of course, once those people start buying land, start buying things, start purchasing things, now you have a foreign influence, a foreign culture influencing what is your traditional culture. That is the way to defeat a people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we're seeing it now with the EU. It's getting more integrated now. There's a EU military union, which all EU countries are more or less signed up to, including Ireland, who are supposed to be a neutral country, by the way. And that was all. This was all hidden in between all this Brexit stuff that was going on, which is another big psyop, Brexit, because that's not going to happen, because Britain is going to be joining this EU military union as well. And Britain is also maintaining all the European laws as well. So there's no Brexit's going to happen. It's all going to be now one big United States of Europe. Even one of the top European bureaucrats, I think his name was Martin Schulz, said that there's by 2025 there's going to be the United States of Europe. All national borders, sovereignty, everything gone.
Well, that is the concept of the United Nations as well, because, you know, when if the United States, as a member of the United Nations, is no different than the 50 states being a part of the United States. The United States itself, representing the full nation, becomes a state of the union that is the United Nations. So you're losing the individual sovereignty of California and Nevada, and you will be losing the individual sovereignty of Ireland and Scotland and England into one big bulk, what do you call it, United Kingdom? You see, the states where the people are supposed to be making the laws, that is what's disappearing. And that's why you have no control anymore.
Mm-hmm. And if only people knew they were our trustees. If only people could see it in that way, that they are our trustees and we can tell them what to do. We've given them our power, Clint, yes?
Yeah, I mean, I go so far as saying, no, you know, to know your enemy, you must know yourself. And absolutely. And I will say positively in my research that I've proven without a doubt that we really have no one to blame but ourselves. We can sit here and say it's the Jews, it's the Russians, it's this, it's that, it's that. But in the end, we really only have ourselves to blame, because we're actually called the gullible people, the Yaphet, I think is the term, the sons of Noah were the Shem, which means name, which I believe is the tribe we're talking about. That means, in other words, the tribe of the name. Because this is all figurative, of course. The Bible is a figurative book, a metaphoric allegory, etc. The tribe of Ham, which means angry, and you know, it refers to the Arab, you know, the red hot temper, etc. And then there's the Yaphet, I believe is the correct son, which actually translated in the concordances means gullible. And you see, the problem with white people is that we're very, very gullible, very intelligent, very clever, very capable of the ideas that you're talking about, but also at the same time, very trusting and very gullible, because the natural law, the law of nature is truly built for, I believe, us. And we're the ones that are supposed to be enforcing it, making it happen. In other words, protecting nature, not pretending we have this empty dominion over it where we can do whatever we want. You see, that's our problem. Our problem is us. We are participating voluntarily in these nations. That is our problem. We are using their currency. We are using their property. We're using their status. We're using all these things, and we're getting benefits for it. We're selling ourselves out, just like Esau in the Bible sold his inheritance for a loaf of bread or a piece of bread or whatever. And that's what this, it really is our fault. And this is something that we have to accept. We have to accept that this cultural and breeding alliance has defeated us in both mentally and physically through these types of civil wars, etc. And we have to overcome that. That is our biggest and greatest hurdle right now, is to overcome this illusion that we are a defeated people. We have to come back from that, and we have to take back what we created.
Yeah,
I totally concur with you there, Clint. I mean, we're not looking at ourselves here. We're too busy pointing fingers. But then the argument will be, well, you know, we were born, went to school, we were brainwashed, and we went through the whole education, so-called education system. You come out, oh, you get a job and you go to college or whatever it is, get married and get a job and you die, right? And this is the way we've been taught, and we're not taught to look outside the box. Then we have the TV that's constantly programming us, the propaganda.
All voluntary. All those things are voluntary.
All voluntary, but then, you know, the argument would be, well, we didn't know. We weren't made aware of this, and if we did know, we would have done something about it, type of thing.
Well, okay, now you're aware.
Yeah. Well, I know we're aware, but unfortunately, most people out there aren't. This is our problem. They have to try and make them aware, and then when you try and talk to people about this, they kind of look at you, you've got three bloody heads, you know?
Well, I look at it this way. I've stopped trying to save nations or stop trying to tell people that we can do this or we can do that. I believe there's a very small remnant, just like the Bible speaks about, there's a very small remnant or what's called a remainder. If you think about the word remainder, what does the Bible say, 144,000 or something like that? But if you think about what the word remainder means, it means what's left over. It means what never left, what never changed. After you add, you subtract, you multiply, and you specially divide something, you have a remainder. What is the remainder? It's those who stay pure, you know, the meek, the prepared, those who are spiritually guided towards God's law, or the law of nature, as we call it. That is who I'm looking for. I'm not looking for the typical person who looks at me with cognitive dissonance in his eyes because he can't accept anything other than what he hears on TV. I'm not looking. I'm not trying to change those people. They're hopelessly lied. I think most people are so corrupted by all of these things we're talking about, added to that the technology and everything else. I think people, including ourselves, are so corrupted. But some people are so corrupted they'll never turn around. And that, I think, is what the Bible even tells you. It prophesizes that. There are still those of us who I believe can be that remainder, who can go back to our source, get rid of the name, get rid of the title, get rid of the benefits, get rid of the technology, get rid of everything, and get out of these completely corrupted nations, which will fall. They can, you know, as Plato said in his Five Regimes, it's a cyclical nature, and I believe it's a planned cyclical nature, going from that spiritual awakening, which so many of us are having at this point in time because everything is so corrupted, into this perfect, if you will, aristocracy. But see, once you're there, you can only go down. And you go down into timocracy and into democracy, which is the worst place you can be in. The only thing left after democracy is people are voting, you know, for themselves and voting themselves, you know, benefits out of the public coffers, is to just break down in tyranny. And then from that point, which we're experiencing, I believe, right now, is that transition into just absolute tyranny, is that spiritual awakening. And that is when new things start forming that are like the old, back to the original, back to that spiritual, you know, system. The problem is keeping it that way. That's what I see happening right now.
So do you see a kind of a split somewhere along the way where people who are kind of woken up to what's going on and are actually really trying to do something to make it better?
I see that the people that will accept digital identity, which is a 2020 goal or 2030 goal of the United Nations, that every man on earth has digital identity no matter what your status, and I see those who are opposed to it and will actually step out of the system. That, I think, is the remnant, those who will not take the quote-unquote mark. I truly believe that that is what we're facing. It is the subject of every single science fiction novel I can think of on the subject, is that battle, including Brave New World, is that you know, those outcasts, those people who went back to nature compared to those who took the mark and became technologically advanced in society, right? That is what we're dealing with, is that kind of division. Those who, like the Amish, for instance, who are, again, are remaining in that system, and despite all the temptations, staying there. And guess who's going to be doing really well when the economic system we're totally dependent on collapses?
Exactly. Yeah.
The meek shall inherit the earth. If you look up the word meek in the Bible in the concordances, what it really means is prepared, and what it really means is spiritually prepared. If you're dependent on this system, if you get your food at the grocery store, you're probably not going to make it.
Yeah. That's it. And what about the people who will just go, well, what about all my stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I can't lose this, and my car and my all this.
Yeah. Yeah, I got one more really important aspect to this, and that is oil. Okay. All right, the estimates that I have gotten from certain people in the oil industry Greg Quinones is a good person to talk to about the oil industry. But his estimates, according to their estimates, are that there would be about a 70% die-off in the population if the oil stopped being distributed. It's not that we're going to run out of oil. There's plenty of oil. It's not that. It's that if they stop distributing oil, I want you to think for a moment. I want you to look around your room. I want you to look at everything that has to do with oil. That includes all plastics, your computer, I want you to think of the fuel that it took to grow, to move the machines, the electricity, everything that has to do with oil. If that stopped tomorrow, within something like 3 months, they say there would be about a 70% die-off of the human population. Why did we grow so fast, so quick, into this $6-7 billion population number? Because of oil and nothing else. So if you turn off the oil, you have just committed a mass genocide.
Wow. That's an interesting take.
I mean, yeah, sit there and think about it. Look at some site, find everything that's made out of oil. You'll be shocked. How do we live without – how are the plants going to be pulled without slaves if the turbines aren't moving, if the tractors aren't moving? What is going to happen? Where are the cars? How is the food going to get to cities? How is it going to come from China to America, because we're now dependent on that, right? Without oil, we are all dead, unless you're spiritually prepared and, for that matter, prepared in other ways.
And are they kind of moving towards that that whole 2030 agenda to move away from oil and to alternative energy, like things like wind power and solar power and all this kind of stuff?
And I can't think of one of those Jews that created that isn't interested in depopulation and doesn't base most of their future predictions on depopulation. I mean, there's websites out there that say United States will sink to a population of like 24 million soon. Right. So I know I don't whatever you might think of these people, I can only say that you better prepare for the worst. Otherwise, as you die of starvation or some gang in despotism, you're going to say those damn Jews, and then you're going to be dead.
Yeah.
You better take care of yourself.
That's it.
But, in this modern age where we can connect like we're connecting now, it didn't take this sort of technology to have them kicked out of how many was it, 109 countries, 200 times or whatever it is. People got to know, and there came a point in people's lives when they say, well, there must have become a point where they say, well, that's it. I mean, it happened in 1218 when Henry III proclaimed the Edict of the Badge, making England the first European nation to require the Jews to wear a marking badge. And on the 18th of July, 1290, King Edward I issued the Edict of Expulsion against the Jews in England. It was widely popular and met with very little resistance. And this decree has never been repealed. Well, that's interesting as well. So we did need, but we did need the internet to beat the Jew. I think it's a question of we have to inform the people. It's the Jews. It's three words from me, Clint. And that's where we need to end.
If you think about it, man, I don't think the Bible could be understood truly until this very age that we're living in, until technology caught up to the point where we can understand what the beast truly is. You know, the artificial intelligence is really, in my opinion, the beast. And I submit to you that the opposite is that. See, they know. They absolutely know that could very easily happen if people had the right understanding and mindset and actually did something else besides watch reruns of Friends on the TV. If that happened and they actually did a little token bit of research in history, as we all have, they'd understand that the history, as Hitchcock, very eloquently said in his book, they were expulsed. What was it? 100 and something countries, or it was something ridiculous. How many times they've
109
been
times. 109 times from 200 countries. No, is it
so?
200 times from 109 countries. Something like that. Whatever. It's a lot.
Right. Well, so what have they done? They've done the opposite. They've created multiculturalism, which is completely against the Bible, by the way. The Bible is not about multiculturalism. In fact, it's the opposite. It supports your stance. It says circumcise yourself, which means take yourself away from, remove yourself from the people, those who are not like-minded, who do not follow the law. You say that's the Jews took that and made it into this sick barbaric custom where the rabbi bites the foreskin off of the child, right? But in the Bible, the word foreskin is a bad translation, and it actually means something figurative. It refers to the tough skin, if you will, metaphorically, that surrounds your eyes and your ears and your heart. That's what it actually means. It means you're not spiritual because there's this artificial thing, this propaganda, this belief system that stops you from following the law of God, which means that you're respecting all these flattering titles, these fabled genealogies, persons, corporations, etc., right? You're not living in the moment. You're not living truly under the law of nature. And so what they've done is they've done the opposite. They've turned us into a state of confusion where we can't even identify a race or a culture anymore. We can't even point our finger at who is and who isn't a Jew. We can't even define terms where we agree with each other anymore. And that, to me, is the sign to start listening to the Bible and say, okay, I'm out of here. I don't want to be part of this system anymore. I don't think the system can be fixed, personally. I don't think you can fix the matrix while you're a subject of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, remember, Graham, we had Paul English as a guest on here. He's kind of a part of the kind of Christian identity kind of side of things, but he said that the Bible was actually written for white people. Do you agree with that, Clint, yourself? And that is our law right there. We follow that.
You know, the term white is the problem because it's not I don't think it describes, you know, what is white, right? What is black? There's so much in between that's an impossible definition. I do understand one thing about the Bible, and who it's intended for, and that is that when we say the blood of Jesus Christ, again, we're talking about a figurative concept, and it is a reference to the law. Jesus Christ is a personification of God's law. You're supposed to follow the example that Christ sets. Now, is that reserved for a certain color skin? That's, you know, some people, if you that's your opinion, you're welcome to it. I don't believe that. No, I believe that it has nothing to do with race. It has to do with your capability, your intelligence, your knowledge, your understanding of what is the law. And honestly, when you're talking about these different races, especially those ones in Africa, etc., who have been kept so ignorant and so poor and destitute that they never could have possibly had a chance to learn and follow Christianity and its true meaning, which is in the, you know, this is all stuff I've written about in my book. But I don't believe it's a race thing because it's a law, and I don't think that the law is something. Law is something that you learn. It is something that is instinctual. You follow it. Everybody has and knows what it is instinctually. But I do believe that there is a certain, again, cultural and breeding alliance that looks specifically for psychopathy because you really have to be psychopathic or completely controlled and brainwashed like we are to not want to follow the law of Christ, the law of God, which is, again, personified in the example of Christ. You really have to be insane not to want to live in pure love and charity at all times, really. I mean, you have to be insane to support capitalism when the law is against money, mammon, valuation, right? And it's this beautiful concept. So I don't think it is about race specifically.
Well, I think it came from a European Christian culture, Clint. That's my point. that it's coming from. Well, I'm not saying it's color of skin now. I'm saying that we gave it seems that we created everything that there is in terms of building technology, arts, etc.
Well, that would dismiss the Japanese, the Chinese, and their
what have they given the Western world? And what has the Western world given to everyone else?
Slavery.
Yeah. You can find the negatives, but there's the positives as well.
Well,
because European Christian is given European Christian culture. I don't do religion personally, but it's the European Christian culture that's inherent in us. It's not inherent in other people. It's not inherent in the African man, as we've seen what they've done to the settlers of South Africa, which is a totally different subject, I know. But so I think it's our culture. They don't have that culture.
Well, say culture is not race. Culture is that's what I'm trying to get at, is when you're talking about ethnicity is what language you speak. It has nothing to do with race. We talk about culture. It has nothing to do with race. It has, however, that is not to say that the Irish culture is not strictly Irish, or that the Japanese culture is not strictly Japanese, right? So there's, when you say culture, you're not talking about race. However, it is, because, you know, that's before we traveled all over the place by plane, of course you had specific racial cultures. And, you know, we're again in a battle of words here, culture versus race, right? So yeah, I understand what you're saying. I understand the Christian identity thing, but what the term white is very much a term like the word Jew. Who qualifies as white, and who says, who are you to say that I'm white or not?
Well, you're white by European Christian culture, as you said. You're of German
culture.
Culture. Your culture is European.
So then it's not race.
Well, in terms of race, I'm talking about whites. So we get back to being white again. Again, that's the term being used. We know there are non-whites that are doing good things, but whenever they did it, where did they come from? They came from a Western European culture. That's what they were creative in.
Right. And I totally understand what you're saying. I'm just trying to differentiate between those terms, because again, white is not a, it's a term that the elites created for themselves specifically, and they defined it according to their own bloodline, and only certain people can be considered white persons, right? I mean, that's even in the legal dictionaries. You can look up white person, and it'll tell you who is not a white person. Mongoloid, Japanese, Chinese, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you see, the difference is that it's saying white person, and person means status. It doesn't mean race. What it really refers to in their structure is the bloodline. And see, that's where it's all at for me, is the bloodline. We're dealing with a mostly negative blood type bloodline, right? That's 10-15% of the whole population of Earth has negative blood. The rest has positive blood. So, you know, there's so much more to this, I think, that we would have to narrow it down to, you know, the Queen of England, O negative blood, Barack Obama, AB negative blood. That's what he takes with him, according to Time magazine, right? They're all related. They're all of this specific bloodline, and they create these nations, these cultures, for themselves and their posterity. So, yeah, there is a lot of negative to go with the positive, because they're the ones, the psychopaths are the ones in charge. We do all the work. We're the grunts. We're their employees, right? We're the wage slaves. But, you know, the blueprints, the bad stuff comes from these people who are in charge, which is a specific bloodline, or what they call the royal bloodline. So, to me, those are the Jews.
Yeah.
And they're white.
Are they?
Okay. And Clint, I mean, it comes back to what's your take on this whole white nationalist thing, which has kind of sprung up in recent years? I mean, it's like, it's obviously a reaction to what they see is going on, and see that there is a genocide, you know, to quote white people. And but are they not seeing the actual meanings of the words that they're using? You're being kind of dragged down another little rabbit hole here.
Well, and again, I'm just stating the facts. Is, you know, opinion is you can form opinions, but the fact is that the nation was created by a certain people for their as it says, for themselves and their posterity. It will always be that way. It will never change. You cannot secede from the Union. It's in the state constitutions. There's all this stuff that we have here. It's all a bunch of our patriotism, our nationalism is like Stockholm syndrome. We're a defeated country. We're under military rule. We have no constitutional rights. We Americans have no idea what their disposition is politically or spiritually. We're completely a defeated, lost people. And I can say that about most people around the world because they celebrate monarchy. They celebrate a central government over individual, self-government, in other words, because they're not following the law of nature. They're taking the benefits of the state, and therefore they are property of the state. They're under the law of a false god. What is a false god? It's a corporation. What is the Pope? The Pope is an office. There is no Pope. It's a crown. It belongs to the Vatican. What is the Queen? There is no Queen. It's a crown, and it belongs to the Crown Corporation. The Queen doesn't own anything. The Crown Corporation does. Just because you put a mortal man in the office of king does not make him a real king. It's an office. It's a title that belongs to a corporation. United States is a corporation. You see, we're worshiping artificial persons. What does the Bible say? Do not worship persons or respect persons in any way. None of us should be members of a nation. When you look up the term nation, in fact, let me pull up the term nation and maybe this will answer your question. Because this is very important to understand where these words come from. What is the term nation? I'm going to go to Webster's 1828 dictionary, right? One of the most respected in the world. A nation means to be born. In other words, you're born in captivity. A body of people inhabiting the same country are united under the same sovereign or government. Okay, that means you have a sovereign. That means you have someone that can tell you without any other consideration, a lawless person, someone who has no law above them, what they can do. The English nation, the French nation, a body of people speaking the same language or a body that has formerly been under a distinct government. Graham, do you remember what I told you about your language?
No, I can't, Clint. Remind me.
I asked you, why the hell are you speaking English when you could speak, what's it called?
Cornish, isn't it?
Cornish. Oh, Cornish. Oh right. Sorry, I'm not with you. Right.
Why are you speaking English, the language of the legal language? Why are you speaking in the legal language when you could be speaking a language that is not recognized by these tyrants, that is not legalized, that has not been made into an official language that is property?
I think we are back. Are you there, Bri?
I'm here, Graham. Yeah.
And you, Clint?
Yes.
Well, don't take so long to answer, my lover. I didn't think he was there then.
Apologies. Lost connection there, did we?
I lost the connection again. Yeah, that's the second time it's happened on air. There you go. That's the way it is.
Clint was in full flow, giving us the whole breaking down the whole dictionary of the English language with words. And it was quite fascinating, actually, looking at the different. I mean, I've heard you speak about this before, Clint, and it's like you really do need to have the dictionary right in front of you to look up all these words. So let's bring it back to this whole idea of nationalism. You know, people saying, oh, I'm a proud nationalist, and this is where we need to go back. You know, us white people, we need an ethno-state of our own. What do you say to these people now? What are they, you know?
Well, so you got to understand that the culture you're speaking of, why it was so powerful, why it was in power, why it was able to do what it did, and I know people don't like to hear this, it's because of the Bible. Right. See, that's the one thing that's missing in the white, quote-unquote, race, or the white culture, if you will, is the Bible. We have been torn away. The one thing they had to do to feed us was to take away the law. Now, I want people to understand, the Bible is not religion in any way, shape, or form. Religion is something that builds up around something. It has nothing to do with the thing itself. The thing, for instance, Masonry says that its sacred books are the Quran, the Talmud, and the Bible. That does not mean that the Bible is Masonic. Does not mean that the Quran is Masonic. Does not mean that the Talmud is Masonic. It just means that that's a religion. Well, they call themselves a religion when they want tax breaks, but they're not a religion any other time. That is what is built up around the object itself. The object itself has nothing to do with that. The Bible is nothing more and nothing less than a book of law. So if you've ever seen the movie Book of Eli, did you guys happen to see that?
No, I haven't seen that.
So Book of Eli is it's post-apocalyptic. Most people are dead. And there's a guy who's old enough to remember, you know, two guys that are old enough to remember the past and how powerful the Bible was. And so one guy's looking for the Bible. All of his henchmen are, you know, the evil henchmen. They're completely illiterate. They have no idea what they're looking for. He just says, go out and get all books, because he doesn't want them to know what it is that he's looking for, and he doesn't want them to know what's in the Bible, because it is the ultimate power. In the wrong hands, it is the ultimate power. It is the power to control and to govern. Meanwhile, you have the good character who's trying to get the Bible so that it can be shared. The law can be spread to this post-apocalyptic world, right? And so you've got this battle between good and evil. One wants to rule by keeping people completely ignorant of the Bible and using the power within to rule. And then you have one who's trying to, a messenger, an angel, trying to share the law so that things can go back to what people have heard it used to be before the apocalypse. Okay, it's very important to understand that which is good can be very, very easily used for that which is evil. And so they've stolen the ability to both read and comprehend the Bible from us. They've done that through religion, because religion is completely against what the Bible says. The Bible doesn't promote religion. Okay, it's amazing when you actually read this thing. It is completely a book of law, and what that law is very simple. It is to keep it real. Live always in the truth that is self-evident, not the truth of man, not the truth. You say money is a true. No, money isn't true. It's a creation of man. You do not live in the creation and ideas of man. You live in reality, in truth. Truth is God. God is truth, right? That's self-evident truth. That's nature itself. You do not add to your name any blemishes, any titles, any fictions. You don't respect the fiction. You don't respect technology. If you look at technology in the old dictionary, it just means art or artificial things. Okay? That is what is missing in our culture, is the very foundation of our culture, which is the Bible. Without that, we can't do anything. And there's one quote that I'm very fond of, Horace Greeley, I believe it was. He said that you cannot enslave mentally or physically a Bible-reading people. He's one of the elite. You cannot enslave mentally or physically a Bible-reading people. Why? Because it is the law of laws. It is the foundation of all law, and once you bypass it, once you sell your rights and sell your soul to the state, to the nation, you lose your ability to have the protection of that highest law on your side. You've given it up. And that is what we have been tricked into doing. The only way we will ever, ever get back from what's happened to us is to understand the Bible. And that is why I am writing this series of books. That is what this whole thing is about, because we don't know. We've been trained to hate the Bible because we hate religion, and that was the whole purpose of religion, is to either make you believe in a false god or to make you hate everything about the Bible. Mm. It's brilliant. It's freaking brilliant.
I see a lot of arguments from people who would call themselves white nationalists and are going right back to their old European roots and say, well, we were all initially a pagan people and we had all this wisdom from that point, and that was all stolen from us, and it was when the Bible came in, it changed everything. Yeah.
And I understand that sentiment, because that's what see, paganism is the worship of, technically, in the correct term, paganism is the worship of multiple gods. Christianity or monotheism is the worship of nature as one, the whole entirety of existence as one living entity, one God. You know, that's the definition of Jehovah. And Jehovah is a concept that stands through all religions, all cultures, the idea of existence itself, self-existence, meaning something not created by man. It's the two things are opposed to each other. And so the problem with paganism is that you're worshiping, you're putting respect on things that don't exist. You're worshiping the water as a god and the air as a god, that kind of thing. That's true paganism, when we're talking about is just polytheism, or polytheism, excuse me.
But would they not say that they are worshiping nature then?
Well, that's just it. See, the problem is we don't know the definite. One of the things that just absolutely changed my entire life and made me realize that all this argument that we have over the Bible is complete bull is I found the definition of God. I don't mean that I said I found God, or that I met God, or that God talked to me. I found the original intention of the word. How can you read the Bible and understand what the word, you know, God means if you don't even know its definition? And that is the definition of that concept, is the monotheistic, if you will, concept of existence itself. And we are part of that. The idea is to take us out of nature. So Christianity, in its real sense, is the worship of nature as the entirety of existence, what it calls the universe, right? The universe is God. What is the opposite of that? Well, it's the adverse. Adversary. That is what Satan means, that which is adversarial to reality or nature. See, that's the definition of God. But what the king did was he purposefully mistranslated the word God, and he took about 30 different words, and he said, these words are all now God. God did this. God did this. Every time you see the word God in the Bible, you have to look it up and see what the original meaning is. It could be Archon. It could be Elohim, which means plural, the gods from Babylonian times. It could be Theos, or godlike. It could be a king, a magistrate, a judge. It could be a mayor of a city. It could be anything. As long as you have some semblance of power, the word God is used. And I'll tell you what, in the old writings, if you ever go read court cases, you'll find that when you plea or make a pleading to the court, you pray to the magistrate. Look up the term magistrate. It says God. The judge is your God, because you're following the law of the state or law of man, and the judge administers that law. You're not following the law of God. You can call yourself Christian all you want, but if you're not following the Bible, which is the law, there's no point in calling yourself a Christian. It's a mute point. It's a legal status created by Rome. The word Christian is not in the Bible. The word Christian was an insult in the Bible. It's a flattering title that means absolutely nothing. If you're not following the law, which means keep your name and your nature pure, no fiction, no artificialness, no titles, no oaths, then you're bound to be governed by men. And it's very clear, the founding fathers, everybody says this, man, you're going to be governed, whether that's by God or by men, that's your choice.
Yeah.
That's what we're missing.
Yeah. I remember you made a very salient point once on one of your shows. You were on a YouTube video, I saw you on it, but Gnostic Media, I think it was. And you said about atheists, you know, who say, well, they don't believe in God. Well, then they don't believe in existence.
They literally, if you look up the definition of atheism, you know, again, it says those who do not believe. Oh, how did I say it? Those who do not believe in the existence of God. Well, if God is defined as existence itself or all of nature, all of the universe, well, then an atheist doesn't is he who does not believe in the existence of existence. And that's funny. That's hilarious. That's how idiotic we've been made in our spiritual lives, in our understanding of the very law, the Bible, that is the foundation of the English and American common law. See, this is what you don't understand, folks. The Bible is the law. It is the foundation of the common law. That's why it's in every hotel. It's all around you. You have access to it, because without your access to it, they can't call it law. They have to have you volunteer to go against the Bible and become one of their subjects, to have them as your false god, your father. Right? That's the problem. We don't understand that the foundation of law is the Bible. That's not me. That's not my opinion. That's the court's opinion.
Yeah. But it's inherent, though, Clint, isn't it? You know, I didn't need no Bible to grow up. I knew when I was doing things right, and I knew I was doing things wrong. When I wasn't sure, my parents put me right like they do all parents do or should do.
Right.
But all the things you talk about is conscious within you, and it's inherent. I don't need a Bible.
Exactly. In other words, it's of God.
That's the point. Yes.
In other words, it's of nature. When I say of God or of nature, I'm saying the same thing. When I say the law of nature, I mean the law of God.
Yeah.
Right? That's the same term. So when you say it's self-evident, the whole point of God, the concept, is that it's truth. It's something that's self-evident. It's not – they call it the unwritten law, the spiritual law. It is not something created by man. So you're absolutely correct.
Yeah. Yeah. You learn by your mistakes. And those mistakes you make are going to be small, and they're not going to let you make bigger mistakes if you follow your true conscience.
And if you read the Bible, if you're a Bible reading people, which our culture was, right? Today you can't be enslaved, right? But today you can't even talk about politics or religion at a party. Politics and religion used to be the absolute measure of a man. If you could not keep your own in conversation, you were considered just a commoner.
Yeah.
You were just nothing at all. Today, you can't, as you said, you know, you try to talk to people, they just turn away or they look at you like you're crazy. But that used to be the measure of a man. That, again, is why we have fallen. That is why we are a defeated people, because the law has been taken from us.
Yeah.
And
Sorry, Graham, go ahead.
I was going to say, Clinton, so how do we take it back? I mean, we know, when I say we, Bryce, I don't know what your position is, how you deal with the system, Clint. Perhaps you could explain how you get by in your situation with this knowledge.
Well, I make no qualms about it. I'm a citizen of the United States. I have not shed that because I wanted to learn everything I could before I took this, what you might call a leap of faith, back into a situation where I have no. See, here's the problem. The true definition of freedom, the legal definition of freedom, is franchise. You have the freedom of the city. In other words, the jurisdiction, right? Just like a mouse is, or a rat is free in a cage. He can go around the cage all he wants, right? But we can't go anywhere without a passport. We're in an open air prison. That's what a nation is. It's what a jurisdiction is. And because of that, because we're subjects, we're protected. We have safety and security, et cetera, which is complete BS.
Yeah.
What we don't realize is that the true meaning of freedom is to have no safety, no guarantees, no insurance, no protection whatsoever. That is freedom. Absolutely. You see, that's our problem. We've been sold a bill of goods that if we have a system of money that can protect us in insurance, mammon, the thing the Bible says don't participate in, well, then everything will be good. We're protected, right? You see, that's the problem. No, everybody, including myself, I'll admit it, I'm afraid to step out into the true world, into nature, back into nature, and become what the Bible says. Bible even says, become a son of God, right? Not the son, but a son of God. That's a verse right straight from the Bible. That means you're following in the footsteps of Christ, the example, the epitome, the personification of God's law, the law of nature. So I'll tell you what, man. After all of the different schemas, the different gurus out there selling different things, you know, my book is free. I don't want anything. Download it for free. It's at strawmanstory.info. You can download it for free. I expect nothing. I am trying to make my contribution by writing these books and making people understand what the Bible says, the law. And the only way you can understand the law is to compare the Bible law, the natural law, the law of nature, to the legal law, because they coexist. They're absolute opposites to each other. You cannot understand one without knowing the other. And this is why nobody understands the reasoning and the concept of the legal law, because they've never touched the Bible. It's why I was always confused and came to dead ends, because it always referred to the Bible, and I refused to go to the Bible. What is the Bible? It's the remedy. It's the absolute answer to all legal fiction, which is the creation of man. You see, that's the two cannot be separated. If you separate the spiritual law from the legal law, then you're completely in a system of corruption that you can't get out of. And that's the point. So I'll tell you, let me read you a couple of maxims of law, and this goes for all of our countries. These maxims are basically principles are, you know, they stem anywhere from biblical ones, which are the foundational ones, all the way up to contractual ones. And, you know, under a contract, anything goes, because the maxim of law is that the contract makes the law. Citizenship is a contractual relationship. So you don't have the natural law on your side. So here is what I'm talking about, because after all those schemes, after all those ideas, how to get rid of your Social Security, how to do this, how to, you know, I think I've figured out the answer, and it's way more simple than I could have ever imagined. Nothing is so natural as to dissolve anything in the way in which it was bound together. Therefore, the obligation of words is taken away by words. The obligation of mere consent is dissolved by the contrary consent. Right. Did you get that? How was I placed into this system? Now, what happened is my parents are conned, just like their parents were conned, into creating a record of my vital statistics, which the government then used to create a legal entity through the birth certificate process. We're all in common there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as I grew, my parents, on my behalf, because I couldn't do anything by myself, I couldn't consent by myself, right?
No.
My parents put me through all of these things. They got me a Social Security. They put me in school under my legal name. I got a bank account. See, I started using the name, the property of government that they created. I wasn't using just my Christian name, which is the official legal term for the name given to you at birth. The last name is the surname. The surname belongs to the state. When you combine your Christian name and the surname, the legal name, you become that's what creates the legal entity. It's taking away your God-given rights and creating a legal right or benefit. Okay, that's the corruption. That's the mark, the blemish that we're not supposed to do. We're not supposed to attach our Christian name to anything. No additions, right? Be the remainder. No additions. So I go along. I reach the age of consent. What do I do? I have a choice to make at that point. I'm 18 years old. What do I do? Well, I don't know that I have a choice, so I continue using all of this property of government, the name, the Social Security number, the bank account, the property, anything that I'm using that is part of that status. And therefore, I've just what's called confirmed and ratified the contract. I have consented to the contract by expressing my willingness to consent to the law, because I'm using all of those things which are not my own. I'm using the property of another. Bible says don't do that, right? So now, what does this say again? Nothing is so natural as to dissolve anything in the way in which it was bound together. How was my legal person, my status, bound together? It was bound together by a birth certificate.
Okay.
So what is the solution, i.e. the end of contract, of a birth certificate?
Well, it's to remove it.
A death certificate.
Okay. That's the thing, yeah.
All
right.
Yeah. All I need to do is get a death certificate.
Yeah, and say that you are no longer a legal person.
Exactly. So then, yeah. So then, what can I look at to say, okay, what is a birth certificate and what is a death certificate? Well, a birth certificate represents the creation of a legal entity. Sure, legal means fictional. That is not me. From the age of 0 to the age of 18, okay, that had nothing to do with me. But by the when I consented to it, then all of a sudden I took upon that identity, that legal entity, that confirmed and ratified the whole thing. I'm now under contract, what's called the contractual relationship, okay?
Yeah.
Because as long as I'm using the property of another, I'm under the law of that property owner. That is what the person is. So if it was created by a birth certificate, it must be dissolved in the same fashion, which means it can only mean one thing, a death certificate. So does that mean that I have to die?
No.
No, it's a legal entity. I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about a completely separate entity.
Absolutely,
that was created by government.
Yeah, it's a dead entity anyway. Yeah.
How do I kill my straw man? How do I destroy... And the correct term is actually execute, because when a contract is done, it's called execution. You execute the contract. It's done.
Yeah.
You've fulfilled your obligations. Your performance debt is no longer available. And it's not a monetary debt. It's called a performance debt. We have to perform according to the contractual obligation and laws, right? So that's what citizenship is, a contractual performance debt. So what is the solution? Solution means end of contract. What is the solution to my problem? My problem is that I'm even though I'm a natural born, which means I'm part of the, you know, I was born in the, I technically I should be a member of my state and not my nation, my people and not the fiction that is the nation,
yeah.
Right? My solution is a death certificate. Now, how do I get a death certificate? Let me read you a little story. And I, Breiser, you might be familiar with this one. I think I might have read it to you. Mm-hmm. But I want to tell you about a gentleman who this is my favorite story. The Huffington Post reported on October 10th, 2013, in Findlay, Ohio. An Ohio man is finding out there's no easy way to come back from the dead. Donald Miller Jr. went to court this week to ask a county judge to reverse a 1994 ruling. This is 2013, a 1994 ruling that declared him legally dead after he had disappeared from his home 8 years earlier. But the judge turned down his request, citing a 3-year time limit for changing a death ruling. The judge called it a strange, strange situation. We've got the obvious here, a man sitting in the courtroom. He appears to be in good health, said the judge, who told Miller the 3-year limit was clear. He says, quote, I don't know where that leaves you, but you're still deceased as far as the law is concerned, the judge said. Now, what does that mean?
That's a cracking story.
Yeah.
What does that mean? That means that I can kill this thing, this entity. I can execute, literally. That's the word. See, in the Bible, you have spiritual life and spiritual death. If you're in civil life, which is the person we're talking about, then you have spiritual death because we're not following the Bible law, the law of God. If you have spiritual life, then you simply cannot be part of a nation. You cannot be in the person because the law says do not respect persons. Right, I can read you 20 different Bible verses that says do not respect persons and flattering titles. It's very they're all over the place. It's in every chapter. Right? So he resurfaced 8 years ago and went to the court so that he could get a driver's license and reinstate his social security number. And guess what? His ex-wife opposed the fact that he wanted to live again in the legal realm, saying she doesn't have the money to repay the Social Security benefits that were paid out to her and the couple's two children after Miller was declared dead. Why did he leave? Because he owed a bunch of child support. He just disappeared. So the statute of limitations says that after 7 years without any use to this quote-unquote person, you're declared legally dead. Does that mean you're spiritually dead? No. This guy just got a blessing. He doesn't even know it. He's begging. He's literally on his knees begging this judge to put him back into the slave system. He has no idea what has happened to him, what a blessing this was from God. And here he is just begging for that legal status to come back. So I submit to you that the first step is finding out, how do we get a death certificate while we're still alive?
Well, that's interesting if you're taking it from the point that you want to get out of the system.
Before you comment, keep in mind that if I get a death certificate for my national citizen, it doesn't stop me from being a state citizen.
Okay.
In fact, what I'm doing is just reverting back to what I'm supposed to be in the system itself. So in other words, I'm going back into the private, not the public. I'm not no longer acting in the property of government. I'm now acting per myself, sui juris, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not leaving the system by doing that. I'm simply going back to my quote-unquote people, the territory, the land, the private land itself. And I think this would be the same for all places.
Yeah. My point was, Clint, is to stay in. You need one foot in the system or one foot out. That's how my life would be impossible without having one foot in the system and one foot out. In other words, I need my state benefits because I paid for them. I don't need to pay your parking fines or your speeding fines because I didn't know them. There was no harm or loss. So I'm in and I'm out. And for me, I couldn't think of any other way of doing it.
That's where the Bible comes in again. It says, it is better to be cold than lukewarm. And lukewarm refers to being both in and out. You might as well just be in. You can't be in and out. You have to be one or the other. And I understand your sentiment. This is what I'm saying. This is a spiritual awakening. You're saying you can't. I disagree with you. No. It would be sacrificial for you. I mean, you'd have to give up a lot of things. You'd have to do a lot of things that you don't want to do because you're comfortable. But I'm telling you, you're a volunteer.
That's the hard, as you said, Clint, that's the hard, cold reality of it.
Right. Yeah. You have to be, you can sit here and complain all you want about the Jews, but until you come out of their system, you might as well kiss their frickin' boots.
But I don't. I don't kiss their boots. I don't give them any of my money. They have nothing off me more than for what, well, they do because of convenience sake for driving.
Exactly. You understand what I'm saying. You understand sentiment of what I'm saying.
Yeah,
right?
I do. But I also understand the sentiment that the only way I can fight them is to give them as little money as possible. So when you send me your fines, your parking fines and your income tax, you know, I don't exist. Sorry.
But see, that's the problem is that what it is that you're fighting is people are fighting government because what we're doing is we're acting in their property and pretending that we have any say-so in the law that regards their property. That's the status, the person. See, it's an illusion to think that you can quote-unquote win in court against government when you're operating in its property. Likewise, if you rent a car, a vessel, right, a ship, a citizenship, a vessel, a car, you're under the law. You're under the law of the company that rents it to you. Plus, more than that, you're under the United States law and the law of the state where you're driving. You can't get around that when you're using the property of another. So if you have any benefit whatsoever from government, then you are breaking the law of nature. It's that simple. There's no lukewarmness. You can't be in and out. And I know that I'm not attacking anybody.
No, sure.
I'm just saying that is where we must get to. That is the spiritual. That is going back to God, i.e. nature.
Yes.
I mean, I can't there's no arguing against it when you actually, you know, there's a point where it just defeats you and you're like, okay, I understand. I get it. There, you just can't be lukewarm. You can't, you're in or you're out. It's, that's just how it works, man. Well, that's their law.
Well, it's their law. It's our war. It's our war. That's the thing. And this is the only way I can fight them, by not giving them money and just cause them as much trouble as I
can. It's a spiritual war. That's the problem. And a spiritual war cannot be won by political means.
Yeah, I think what we're trying to do, Clint, is that we're trying to get through this slowly, and we're realizing that, you know, things like parking tickets and speeding fines, that you can get out of them by being clever, you know. And you can do certain things which gives you back a lot of power which you didn't think you had. So you're kind of saying, right, let's. But I do realize that we have to move on further from that. That you can't just stop there.
I think the illusion, though, is that you have power in your person to do things. And what I'm trying to tell you is, when you get a speeding ticket, that is being written towards their property. When you're surety, as the Bible says, when you're surety for another, you will surely smart for it. Smart means be put in pain. And being put in pain means you can be charged taxes and fines and fees. So what I'm saying is that when they write a ticket, they have to have a person, a status to write it to. If you have no status, then they can't write the ticket. Well, they can, but they can't enforce it. Now, if you look at the United States currency itself, here's what it says. This, I'm paraphrasing. This can be used, this legal tender, this is legal tender for transactions both private and public. You see?
Mm-hmm.
That is the key to everything. We're acting in public as goyim, property of another. We're not acting privately. Sure. We're not acting as ourselves, as men. We're acting as persons. Yes. Every law of the United States, every law that has to do with you guys over there, is a public law, a positive law that affects only their property. What is their property? The person, the status that you're operating under. Any benefit that you get goes to the person. It doesn't go to you. Hmm. It goes to the person. Sure. It's a little corporation that you have.
Yes, I know. Yeah. But yeah.
So
where we
what
would
is
say,
the solution? The solution is to not use that status anymore. Then nothing can be applied to you.
Well, I
except
agree.
The natural law, the law of nature.
But that would be to go back to remove my pension for my state pension now. That would be absurd.
Do you know how Samuel Johnson defined the word pension?
No.
Let me pull it up real quick, just to give you an idea of what a pension used to be considered. Because, see, pensions are welfare for the middle class. Okay, Samuel Johnson, Dictionary of the English Language, 1755, he says, pension is an allowance made to anyone without an equivalent. In England, it is generally understood to mean pay given to a state hireling for treason to his country. In other words, you're working for the government. They're paying you off to do something that is very, very bad for your country. So, you know, if you want to use that as an excuse, you can.
That's a very interesting take on it, I have to say. It really is.
And again, I don't mean offense by this. I'm only quoting their words. Their words. They are the ones that are coming up with this, not me.
Yes, but the words that they come up with, we don't use.
So this is the big problem we face, is are people ready to do that? Are they ready to give up all these benefits? You know,
they can't.
Well,
we have inalienable rights and all the rest of it, God-given rights, and you know, to be on the land and to use it for our benefit. The land will benefit us, not government.
Let me correct you. Under God, you have unalienable rights. Says so in our Declaration of Independence. But if you read every state constitution, it replaces the word unalienable with inalienable. The difference between those two, government couldn't exist if it recognized unalienable rights. That would mean they can't be sold. But inalienable changes the meaning. It makes your rights property that can be sold. And so you'll find, if you look, every state constitution in our nation here says you have inalienable rights. Your rights can be sold, because government can't give you artificial rights to replace your God-given rights unless you sell your soul to government. You sell your soul to the devil. You contract. Devil can't affect you unless you contract with him, right? He can't do anything to you until you sign your name on his dotted line. The devil just means adversary. Who's your adversary? Government. It wants to take away your unalienable rights by getting you to agree that they're inalienable or sellable. That's why the Constitution say that. So I'm sure it's the same where you are, because if it did recognize you as unalienable, then it could not put a lien on you. It could not contract with you. It couldn't do anything to you.
Yeah. But then if you wanted to be a true sovereign man or woman, right, and be in the private, you have to kind of grow your own food and find your own water source and some form of energy,
which
shelter,
is
sustenance, whatever.
Absolutely.
I mean, that is extremely difficult now because the government basically have laid claim to everything.
Well, let me give you a different perspective on that notion, because I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
What is God? God is the universe, all of existence. Guess what that includes? Men.
Right.
Why do you think that you have to go and rely on some frickin' maple tree or apple tree? Why can't you go out and rely on the goodness and charity of men? Men are part of God. Just because they're acting like jerks and being part of this system does not mean that they have lost their spiritual sense, that they've lost their charitable sense. Freeman Fly, man, how many years did he go relying on the charity and kindness of strangers, right? If you know his story, right? So you got to realize you have to take a different perspective here, because remember, you're relying on God, and that means everything real. That includes men. So maybe it's not so difficult. Maybe it's actually way easier than we think. But that first step is a doozy. Trust me, I know. I'm scared of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
But those who want to try, you know, keep in contact with me, because I intend sometime to get some private land where people can actually go to escape this thing.
Yeah.
Well, at my time of life, I can only do what I'm doing. I think what I'm doing is right for me now. It's the best way I can respond. As with dealing with the IRS as it is in America, the income tax here, we just won't engage. I will not engage with them because they're as you say, right, they are writing to my corporation. They're not writing to me. So I don't open it. Let's just address the unknown, return to sender. And it's done, as far as I'm concerned, and then we'll take it from there. For example, I got a parking speeding fine back in March, and it's gone through the system with apparently a £650 fine, 6 penalty points, whatever. And everything they've sent me, it's address the unknown, return to sender. And now it's come to the bailiff. So now we've got the bailiff at the door. Bring it on.
Imagine, though.
Bring it on.
Imagine not having to do that at all.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But a bit that is all I can do at the moment. I can't do no more than fight these bastards and fight them in every way I can. I will not give them a cent that I don't have to. And I'll run them around.
Well, so there's two problems with that. And I understand your sentiment. Trust me. Again, I'm not trying to offend or put you down or, you know, I'm not better than you and you're not better than me. Nothing like that. First of all money is property of government. To say that you're not going to give them a dime or a cent, they could take your money at any time. It's their money. It's their property. You're a user. Nothing else. Users are not owners. Second, the point where you confirmed and ratified and continued to use your name, you got married, you had children, you put them into the system, etc. That is a contractual relationship. So you can pretend that you're not, you know, again, because you're operating in their property, you're surety for their property, i.e. their status, they can come get you anytime they want. So at the moment, yeah, they're not messing with you because you're a public figure. I understand that. That doesn't mean they can't. But to be fair, what did I say earlier? What would true freedom be? No security, no protections, no whatever. That doesn't mean, you know, by leaving the system that they can't touch you. They can't come and put a boot on your face and whatever. Absolutely. I'm not saying that at all. No. I'm saying that they can do that regardless, whether you're a citizen or you're not a citizen. So that's a moot point.
Yeah, they want to kick a dog, they can kick a dog.
Yeah, yeah. So you're never gonna get around that. The argument that they have the right to use force lawfully only applies to the person. It doesn't apply in any other way. So.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing much the same as what Graham's doing, you know.
Well, a little bit larger than me, Brian.
Yeah.
I've got a roof over my head.
I've done a lot of things, for example, property tax here. I've sent that all back, returned to sender. I have my own little blurb I put on the envelope, which is, I do not recognize you. I do not understand your intent. I have no international treaty with you, no liability, no assured value, no liability, return to sender. And that has kept the wolves from the door. Now, they keep sending letters back, and they might try to contact me, but I keep sending it all back again. It's like a kind of tennis. And it's a bit of fun as well, because I enjoy doing it. And I know it's not the ultimate solution, as you say, end of contract type of thing, because I know that I'm in it. I have signed
up. Exactly. And
This is just the best way for the moment, until we get our heads around all this stuff, to at least keep the wolves from the door. And that is happening for me anyway.
Yeah, they've never
given it has given me a sense of power back, where I know where I stand, who I am, and I realize that I do have a lot of power and I can do a lot of things. And I'm not afraid of the system.
No.
Well, see, it also tells you that they have even though it's honor among thieves, they do have an honor system that they have to uphold. And that's a very important aspect of this. It applies to the law of nations, etc. So there is that to consider as well with what I'm talking about. But the perpetual paperwork trail is something I just don't want to do. So I stopped even trying to go against it. I'm just like, you know, keep my hands clean, etc. Don't do anything that's competitive, and until I figure this thing out. So I my whole mission was to get to the end of this thing, find out how the system works and get to the end of it, and then teach others how to do it. And I think that's the point I'm entering right now, is this sort of final understanding of how the thing works. Not that I know everything. I don't need to know everything. I don't need to know every U.S. code, because that U.S. code only applies to my person. If I can get rid of the person, the status, and go in, and be a private quote-unquote person, then none of it matters. At that point, I just have to avoid it and not do anything interstate, right? In other words, foreign commerce. So that is my goal. Now, what you guys are doing is awesome. Don't get me wrong. I totally respect it. I was all about it at one time, but I said, man, am I going to spend the rest of my life like some of these old timers who've been doing this for years, who've been fighting the same battle and, you know, having to file all this paperwork? And, you know, after a while, it's not going to be fun anymore. And it's going to compile and compile. And that's all you're going to do. Your entire life is going to be battling something that ultimately you are liable for, but you found some loophole that says you're not, right? Eventually, it's going to fail, in my opinion. Eventually, at any point, they can suspend their own laws. We have to realize that, too. All constitutions are suspendable. In France, you know, it's the protection of the realms, and Hitler suspended his constitution, Article 48. We have the War Powers Acts. See, a constitution doesn't mean anything if it can be suspended. It's just a joke, right? So if the law can be suspended at any time, there really is no law. But you keep it the appearance of law in an anarchical situation, a licentious situation like we have. You keep the appearance of law and order, and that's why they're putting up with your antics. But at any time that can change, and any time
I realize that.
For sure.
I've just found that I have had success, because the way I've looked at it is, well, okay, I went over the speeding limit, I got a speeding ticket there 2 years ago, and I sent that back, you know. No, again, just a kind of, I do not recognize you, all that, no contract, right?
And it's brilliant. I love it.
And, you know, the cops came to my door twice, 2 days in a row, hammered on my door, and I didn't feel lonely, Clint, so I didn't feel like opening the door, you know? So,
yeah.
And they went away. And that was it. So I didn't get a speeding fine. I didn't get what they have here is penalty points on your license, that you know, which makes your insurance more expensive and all that. So I didn't get any of that, and I thought, that's great.
Yeah.
And it's very simple as well. You don't have to file lots of paperwork or anything. You just send it back to them. And I just found that is a very nice way to kind of get through life without having to really.
But
you know, there's a little wasp at your head buzzing. Yeah, there is that.
Yes.
Right.
But, but I ask you again to imagine if you're driving privately and not in commerce. The problem is you're driving commercially. You don't even know it most of the time. But they assume that 100% you're driving in person in commerce, and they even define the family doctrine is a corporation where you're the head, right? You're responsible for all commercial actions. So imagine being a private person and driving without a license, because you don't need a license if you're private. You're public, so you do. You're using the property of another, so you need a license. Everything is illegal until they give you a license or make a law that says you can do that. See, imagine not getting a ticket because you're private.
Yeah.
This is the thing.
Finish ahead. I just go ahead.
Well, and then the only other thing I wanted to say as far as pensions, what I always try to tell people is I want you to go. I can pull up a stock report for the pension funds, and I want you to see which corporations pensions support, which is all the war corporations, Microsoft, every corporation that you're against, every vaccine corporation, every corporation in China, every corporation around the world is part of a pension fund. And while I understand you get a benefit, you know, for contributing so government can invest in all of that, that pension fund is 100% cancelable at any time. You contributed your money, which means you gave it to them. You have no right to that money whatsoever. They can go bankrupt and you lose everything. There is no guarantees with a pension fund. That, combined with the fact that you are literally supporting every horrible corporation in the world, is enough for me to say, screw this. it's a moral compunction that I just, for me personally, I will not be a part of a pension fund. Pension funds are almost solely responsible for the backbone of globalism, because it allowed governments to invest in all corporations everywhere. And government is the main owner of every corporation in the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People don't know that.
Yeah. I'll just say, Clint, that I've been talking to a lady in the States, right? And she's looking at going into the whole private thing. I won't give her a name because that's private, obviously. And saying that if you want to talk about this type of stuff, that you would have to do it in private. And she knows about you, Clint, right? And she says that by you going on radio shows and talking about this, you're going into the public. So you are, what's the word? Commingling is the word you'd use. So really what you should be doing is getting a group of like-minded people together and just speaking about all of this.
And ironically, the only way I can do that is I'm not publishing anything technically, and I understand the sentiment that you're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm not doing anything personally, so it doesn't affect me. I'm just reading. I mean, I'm practically reading their own law to people that people have never heard before. So really, I mean, it's already published. And the thing about that is the reason you can't find any of this is because, probate stuff, when it comes to private law, that's not published. You don't find private court cases on the public record. That's why nobody knows about this.
Exactly.
So, yeah. And again, you're only reverting to what you originally are supposed to be by your natural birth, quote unquote. You're not actually gaining a status. You're losing the disability is what you're doing by going private.
Yeah.
It's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, it's
no, it's just it's fascinating.
Just shows what's been, you know, how we've been totally, you know, totally.
Let's face it.
Great deception.
We all need to die.
Yeah. Legally. Yeah.
Well,
get out of it, you know.
Yeah, that would be nice.
But again, you know, we've got a long road ahead of us, Clint, because a lot of people are going
before
to
we get there.
It's a lot of difficulty getting our heads around this stuff. You know, it is.
And yet,
I mean,
it's
when you break it down, it is very, very simple. But
screw you.
We make it difficult. You know what I mean?
Because it's part of the great sorrows. Yeah, of course it's going to be difficult. Spiritual awakening is not a happy thing. You're learning about all the lies and you're trying to get rid of them. That's spiritual awakening. You're ridding yourself of the disease that is lies. Dis-ease, to be not at ease because of the fiction. Yeah, it's a horrible, horrible feeling, but once you get there, you start getting towards the top of it. You have your mental breakdowns, and you should allow yourself to have a mental breakdown because, you know, no drugs, right? Just let it happen, because that's the only way you're ever going to escape this thing is to break down from it. You stop believing in it.
Amazing. Clint, thanks so much for coming on at, well, ridiculously, I mean, world record breaking time. I've never seen nothing like that. Could you come on? Yep. I think we were probably 2 minutes into the intro music when you agreed to come on. So thanks so much, Clint. It's been a real
Thank
pleasure.
You.
Can you tell us some? Have you got any links for you want to put out about your work that people can go to?
Strawmanstory.info is where, again, you can download my book. It's like 1,152 pages. It's a research book. It's not meant for the light at heart. It's not meant for those who aren't serious about it. If you want to know what's going on, everything I've learned is going into these books. You can download it for free. I also have a blog, and on my blog, in the next four installments, I'm doing a special thing called The Pillars of Fiction, in which I kind of understand the whole foundation of it. So that's realityblogger.wordpress.com, and then all of my radio shows, you know, there's a couple websites out there. TheCorporationNation.com is where I keep my documentaries. There's one on vaccines and one on the comprehensive annual financial reports and stuff like that. So that's about it.
Yeah, that's how I kind of got to know you, Clint, was the Corporation Nation. When I heard that, when I saw that video, I went, holy shit, you know?
Yeah.
I was mind-blown. And then you did a few more after that, and it was like, that's when I kind of reached out to you when I got talking.
Yeah, they're primary source. They're not entertainment. They're literally going through reports and seeing reality. It's, you know, stuff that you'd like reading the law, you know, people just don't do it. Yeah. And so you're going through the audits of governments. Governments are corporations, all of them. And so you're going through the audit report because every corporation has to have an audit. So it's the most important document of all documents because it shows all the investments of government, which on the budget report it doesn't see. So, yeah, it's just to realize that every government is a corporation is one thing, you know, but because you think it's romantically, you think it's something else. But
that's
it's just
where
a corporation.
I started.
That's it.
That's where I started. That's where I started. But well, it started with the local police force that they were owned by IBM.
And they
were a corporation trading for profit, and that was the big wake up call. That was the big one.
Just remember, contract makes the law. All disease is contracted. All dis-ease. The whole idea is to put you out of ease, out of rest.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And can I ask you, Clint, can you get a hard copy of your book? Because I'd rather look at that than look at it.
Yeah, it's about $32 or so to send to most international places through the post office. I generally ask for a $40 donation or whatever you can give, and I'll send it for free to people too if they don't have the means. I have about 1,500 copies that are just sitting there waiting to go to people.
Put me on that list, man. I'm going to get that.
The donation is not for the book. It's private work, so I'm not selling it. I only give it away as a gift, and I'll accept gifts strictly to keep me going and writing and eating for future works. And that's all explained in the book. It's not published. It doesn't have any barcodes or ISBNs. It's not approved by the church and state, et cetera, et cetera.
Cool. That's right.
Well, yeah, great.
I'll be in touch on that one. I'll definitely
there's some
send
great
you something anyway for your efforts, you know, because I think that would be, you know, it's a book that I'd have to study and really look into and you know,
move on
from my present situation and see where you're coming from, you know.
It's a reference book. It's got over 2,000 legal terms defined. It's got 275 or so different Bible sections and what the words in the Bible actually mean. et cetera, et cetera. So it's definitely a technical, at the same time, a spiritual sort of look at both sides. I say that it's basically the two sides of law, the evil side and the good side, the dark and the light, right? As I said, legal law is diametrically opposed to and cannot be understood without Bible law, which is what we call the law of nature. So that is what it is. It's looking at both paths, basically, and how they interconnect.
Stuff.
Fantastic. It's been a pleasure, Clint. Really, as I could go on for hours, really, if I hadn't had such a long day. And now I love talking law. It's brilliant. And I'm going to remain lukewarm for the time being.
As will I, my friend.
We
all have to do it until we actually reach that point where we know we can do it.
Well, there will be a point when you are offered at the barrel of a gun the mark, the digital identity, the thing that you will no longer be able to escape once you take it. That'll be the point where you're going to have to make a decision.
And that we'll leave it. Clint Richardson, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been a pleasure.
Love you guys.
Thanks, Clint. Bye. Appreciate it, man.
Okay, folks, we're going to wind it up. It's been a very interesting show. It certainly was for us. I hope you found it the same way. So sorry about John Kaminsky. John was not well, not in the best of health. He's not too bad. And there was a mix-up on the time, I have to say. I made a mix-up. I got 2 hours wrong, and John was ready at 4. Instead of being at 6 to 8, I said 4 to 6. I'm still thinking in the old time. I'm like fetched going on about November, still at the 12th of December. So it was partly my fault, and John is not in the best of health. He had a few things he had to sort. So we will be bringing him on as soon as we can in the new year. We're back next week with Janice Barcello. Excuse me, I'm wearing these teeth in for the dog. Janice Barcello will be our guest next week, and she... I think she kicks due ass, bright, doesn't she?
Well, she does. She does, and she talks a lot of good health stuff and lots of very interesting topics she'll be bringing up, you know.
So there you go, folks. Yeah. See you next week.
Speak.
Take care. Good night.
the Goya.